Thank you, Don, for those words, the Lord's table this morning. And Jeremy, for your prayer, and Ted, for this singing this morning. We'd like to welcome you and to invite you to open your Bible to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And we are continuing there the message of the book of Ecclesiastes written by Solomon, the preacher, Koheleth, as he is known in the Hebrew language, the writer of Ecclesiastes, and a message there that is designed to help us to understand life, the meaning of life, the questions of life that are raised as we live here on earth under the sun, and sometimes the frustrations that can build up in our minds as life seems to be so enigmatic, or so many unanswered questions and mysteries and problems that come up in life. The book of Ecclesiastes is written really to help us and to guide us to the understanding that life is given for a very beautiful purpose for us to fear God and keep His commandments, and to honor and glorify God, and to enjoy life while we are here on this earth, but to be preparing and thinking of the future, that hope that we have to spend even a greater life in eternity with God. So the book of Ecclesiastes helps us from an earthly standpoint to work through those questions and come to that conclusion that Solomon intended here. So it is written by the inspiration of God. It is meant for our use and encouragement and for our understanding as God's people today. And we are very blessed to be able to have access to our Bible and be able to read and understand the message here that Solomon is writing. So we're going to read today in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, beginning with verse 1. And he said, "For I considered all this in my heart, so that I could declare it to all," or that I could declare it all, "that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. People know neither love nor hatred by anything they see before them. All things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath as he who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. But for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, their hatred, and their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. Go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with a wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise, spoken quietly, should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Solomon began here in chapter 9 by reminding us that he had applied his heart to search out the meaning of life and to be able to declare it, to be able to give an explanation for others to be able to understand life better, some of the questions that they might be having in their minds. So he considered all of these things. He applied himself to the proper understanding to gain that wisdom that he could share with us. But he said that in that learning and in that consideration that he was doing, he saw that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. Now, meaning by this that those who are righteous, those who do fear God, those who have wisdom that they have been able to gain in this life, even those individuals are under the hand of God. That God is the one who controls their destiny. God is the one who is in control of their lives. Their future is in the hands of God, in other words. And he goes on to say that people know neither love nor hatred by anything they see before them. Now, to be able to see love would be to see God's love or God's favor, that he has something good awaiting us in the future. But on the other hand, to see, to know hatred would be that there could be adverse things or things that we would not hope for to also happen in the future. So he is simply pointing out the fact that God has placed things in life out of our control so that we cannot, even though we are righteous or even the most spiritual people, cannot control life as we would want to seize and use it maybe to control life so that we can have everything laid out for us and a perfect future is in store for us. Yet God does not allow us to do that. So we are not in control of the future. When we look ahead, we cannot see what lies ahead in our life. Whether we be a godly person or an ungodly person, that same thing remains true, that we are part of a human condition here on earth, and as such, God does not give us the full control over our lives. He does not put it in the hands of man to be able to control and manipulate and master life so that it can always outcome the way that we would desire for it to outcome here on earth. No, that is in the hand of God. And so therefore, people know neither love nor hatred by anything they see before them. I cannot look out in front of me and see that in the coming future, everything here from an earthly standpoint in my life is going to be favorable. As if God is bestowing every blessing upon me, and I'm enjoying health and prosperity and success and peaceful things, circumstances in my life. I simply cannot control that. I cannot know that. It's possible that even though I am living a godly life or striving to live a godly life, that there may be foreboding things in the future that I cannot see, and that those are only in the hand of God. That God controls those things that are out in the future, and that He has a reason. He deliberately has done that so that we do not have that ability placed within our hands. So we can understand that Solomon is seeking to understand these things, and yet one of those things that he has been able to see is the fact that whether you're righteous or unrighteous, we're still not going to be able to foretell and anticipate exactly what is coming down the road for us in the future that lies ahead. So we have to trust God for these things. We have to acknowledge the fact that it's not in our control, Lord. It's in Your control. We could not have seen that Tricia was going to come down with this COVID. Here she is, a fine young Christian woman and loving to so many people. And yet there was no way to see in advance what that might happen, that outcome that might be that was so unfortunate and so tragic for her and for her family in that earthly sense. So we see that those things are in the hand of God. They are not in our hand. And God does not allow them to be in our hand, because God wants us to recognize the fact that He is the one who is sovereign. He is the one who is in control over the events of this life, and He has not given that to us. So He said in verse 2 that one event happens to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good, the clean, and the unclean, to him who sacrifices, him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath, as he who fears an oath. So you have on one side people who are striving to live in the way that God would have us to live. The good, the righteous, the clean, the one who sacrifices to God, who brings worship and acknowledges God, and he takes an oath that he will keep the commandment, the covenant of God. He's going to place himself to live a God-fearing life. And you have on the other side people who do none of that. And yet Solomon is saying the same thing happens to both here on earth. And the reason for that is that we are all part of the human condition. We are all the same as far as it comes to we are human. We are here. We are not God. God is God. We are here. We are human. And even though we may choose to worship Him and live a God-fearing life, the fact remains that we still are here on this earthly level. And that so the circumstances of life that we're subject to, and that we do not have control over, and ultimately death itself, those are in the hand of God. They are not in our control. And that in terms of that, all people share in the same condition. So living a godly life, it does not free us from those basic facts that as human beings, when Adam and Eve sinned in the Garden of Eden, and they were driven out from the garden, and they could not have access to the tree of life, the fact began to be true and to be realized that we are going to die, and that somewhere each one of us is going to face that reality of death. That's part of the human condition that we all share in. So every individual is going to go through these things and these circumstances that we are subject to here in this life. And so there is the sudden reality of death that is awaiting each one of us. And he says in verse 5 and 6 then, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live, And after that, they go to the dead. But for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. So we see here that death is an unavoidable evil. He describes it as an evil that awaits everyone. And certainly we would see that from an earthly standpoint, death is an evil thing. Death is not a something that God designed in the very beginning that we would experience. God designed, He put us in the Garden of Eden. There was the tree of life there. But it was the choice that was made to violate the law of God, and they were driven and separated out from that tree of life in the Garden of Eden, and therefore death is the consequences of that for all human beings. And there is an evil that is done under the sun, and that one thing happens to all, we're all going to eventually have to face death. And there's no way that we can avoid that. So he said that truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Now what happens is that many people spend their entire lifetime, it seems, not making any preparation for death. They spend their lifetime pursuing folly, and they pursue entertainment and recreation and how to spend their money, and they're just enjoying this life, and they're not giving a thought in the world to the fact that I may die at any moment, my life may come to an end, but they are not making any preparation for that. They're just living for the moment, and they are living it up here on life. But he said they are doing this while they live, and after that they'll go to the dead. So sometimes, and oftentimes we see this is true, that death comes very abruptly in the life of a person who has been living an earthly life and enjoying and spending the recreation and everything that they can enjoy here in this life. And they suddenly then come to the stark realization that I am ready, I am now going to have to die. And sometimes it happens with no warning in the lives of those people. So this is an evil thing that he has seen, that we are all going to face death, and yet many people are not making any preparation for it whatsoever. They're living as if they're going to live here on earth, and yet we know that's not true. This life is living it. This life is going to come to an end. And so why aren't more people making a preparation for it? In a way that while they are alive, they have the opportunity to do something about it. They can be living in a way that they are making the proper preparation. They are fearing God. They are serving. They're learning to abide within the principles of the commandments of God. And glorifying and their life to contribute something while we have our life that can be to glorify and honor God and make some way that as we approach death, we are recognizing the fact, Lord, that we are going to be coming to meet with You, and we're going to be entering into eternity. And our life, I'm living my life in a way with that wisdom to prepare for that is coming. And yet many people are not doing that, is what he is saying. So it's an unavoidable evil. Now, even a living dog, he said, it's better than a dead lion. Now, the lion, he is the mighty, the greatest of the animal kingdom, as it was. And the dead dog, he is really just an annoying thing. As far as most of the people of that day, it was not a dog was not something of an honorable, and yet he's saying that a living dog is better than a dead lion. Why? Because he's still alive, and there is hope. He can still use his life in a way that is meaningful. If we're a human being and we're still alive, then there's an opportunity that we can be preparing for what's coming in the future. But one who has died, the dead lion or the dead person, their life is over. They have no more opportunity to do those things that needed to be done, and now their life is over and they have no further opportunity for human activity or any kind of preparation that they might need to make to meet their Maker at the end of life. So he says in verse 5, for the living know that they will die, But the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, their hatred, and their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. So their life is over. Their life comes to an end. And the only time that we have to be able to take the gifts of God and use them so that we can enjoy our life is during our lifetime. We cannot save those up and say, I have plenty of time to enjoy my life, the blessings, the gifts of God that He has given me. No, we need to be using those now, He is saying, because our life, we do not know when the end of it is going to come. We need to be using it to make adequate, proper preparation, and we need to be using it that as God has given to us, we can enjoy life and live it in a way that God intended. God intended that His gifts would be used to enjoy them here while we have life. So He says, there is the urgency of living. The urgency of living. Verse 7. Go, eat your bread with joy. Drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white. And let your head lack no oil. So He is telling us there that now is the time to enjoy life. While your lifetime is here, while you have your share in these things and activities and able to participate in these things, we need to enjoy them now. Now, so He lists out the six different basic enjoyments of life that we each can have here. And he names food and drink and work and clothing and oil for comfort and marriage. So these are gifts of God that God gives us to enjoy, richly to enjoy here in this life. Now, Karen gave me the proper paraphrase for us to translate it over into today, and that is, enjoy your tacos and your iced tea while we have that, and maybe put a little salsa on the taco. So enjoy your life while you have it, you know. Eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has accepted your works. These things that we are able to enjoy, they are the gifts of God. He's talking about things that are good, that are wholesome. He's not talking about that God then gives us a right to go to an excess or to just take any type of pleasure that we want to take. No, He's talking about within the God-given boundaries of blessings that God gives us for us to enjoy. We need to use them now. We need to seize the day. We need to not be looking at life from a skeptical or a cynical point of view. This is one of the things that He does not want us to fall into, is that all of the troubles and all of the unanswered questions of life, don't let that take away your joy of knowing that these are blessings that God gives us to enjoy. And so we need to take advantage of them while we have the opportunity. Enjoy your life. So eat your bread and drink your wine and put the oil on your hair that is a comforting and healthy way of wearing nice, white, clean clothing and then enjoying your marriage that God has blessed us with. So we see that he has a feeling that marriage is a gift of God, and we should live joyfully with the companion that God has blessed us with in life. Remember that in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, God said, "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helpmeet for him," that he can have a companionship, a wife. And so God designed this from the beginning for our good. And so He says here, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which He has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. So life is good. Marriage is good. And God blesses us with these things that He intended for us to enjoy in life. Now, He also makes it clear here that our work is one of these blessings that is to be enjoyed. Sometimes we have the attitude today that, oh, my work, you know, is such a dreadful thing. And it's a necessary evil to be able to support my family. But He actually is saying that God intended for work to be one of the blessings that we have in life. When you go back into the Garden of Eden, in Genesis 2 and verse 15, we see that God gave Adam in the beginning there to dress and keep the garden. So He gave him work to do while he was in the garden before sin had occurred. And of course, after sin had occurred, then He simply said that you will work by the sweat of your brow, and there will be thorns and other hardships that you will have to deal with. But work did not come about as a part of the curse. Work was given even before that, and His point is that work is a good thing. So whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. So you're not going to be able to do your work in the grave. Well, after we die, we might like to, like Gary, he enjoys working on his cars. And he was working, you know, with steel and was very gifted in that. But Solomon is saying those are things that are good and skills that we can use while we are in this life. But if once we die, of course, we're not going to be able to participate in that any longer. So enjoy it while now we have the opportunity. We see that Solomon here is advocating then a view of life that is in enjoyment of life. And that is part of his message, that life is to be enjoyed. We are to fear God and keep His commandments because there will be a day of judgment. We will stand before God, and we always need to be preparing for that. But while life is here, we should enjoy it. God gives us these blessings to enjoy. The ability to have food and clothing and to be able to have a family and a marriage. Those are good blessings that God gives. And part of that is the work that we are able to do. So enjoy God's good gifts here and now while life remains as a blessing of God. Now, this is the same view of life. I wanted to mention that early Christians had this view of life. This is not unique to Solomon, that he is suggesting something here that is strange or new. But actually, we find that Jesus advocated that we should enjoy life, and that the early Christians in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 2, it talks about the fact that as they were coming together, they took their food with gladness of heart. They sat down to meals together, and they participated, and they enjoyed those things together. And in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4, the Apostle Paul says, "Rejoice in the Lord." And again, I will say, rejoice. So God intends us to enjoy life. This fleeting life, it's a short life that we have here on earth, and it's not going to last forever. And when it comes to an end, then we will not be able to do those things after that. Of course, we have the assurance that there is a better life waiting for us. But they're not going to be earthly activities like we have participated in here, perhaps. They will be of a different nature. So he goes on in verse 11 to talk about the fact that life, coming back to the fact that he has said before that life is in the hand of God, But he said that there are untimely events that happen in life that we cannot control, and we cannot always foresee that they are coming. And he said, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it all falls suddenly upon them. So he pointed out the fact here that there is no guarantee in life that the fastest runner in the race is going to win the race. And we see that in athletic competition a lot. And he gives other examples of this, but they're all to the same point, that it doesn't always turn out the way that that it looks like on paper that it is going to turn out. So the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Sometimes it's the underdog, the unexpected, that comes out of nowhere and wins. And so it's not always the Heisman Trophy winner that goes on to be the best, greatest NFL quarterback. Sometimes it's people like Tom Brady who were drafted. He was drafted the 199th position in the draft, and yet he has now won 7 Super Bowls. So it isn't always the person that you think, oh, he's going to be the winner. He is going to be the great. He has all the talent. He has all the skill. He's number one. And yet life doesn't always turn out that way, because there's other factors involved. There's character. There's determination. There's the ability of that underdog to work hard and improve himself. And there's the unforeseen injuries and accidents that can shorten that person's career so that he never does realize those things that were expected of him. So life is unpredictable. That's the bottom line. Life is unpredictable. And God designed it that way intentionally, so that we do not see the end from the beginning. We have to recognize the fact that God is the one who holds those things in the future under His control. They are in the hand of God. And there is such a thing as time and chance that happens here in life. Time. There is a timing. There is sometimes people are in the wrong place at the wrong time, and a tragedy happens. We see that happening all the time. Time. We can't control it. There is the unfortunate timing that sometimes falls on a person in the wrong place at the wrong time, and therefore their life may come tragically to an end with no reason. People go to work on a beautiful September morning, and here come 2 airlines flying into the building. Out of nowhere is expected such a thing to happen. It's never happened before. And thousands of people die that morning as a result of it. They're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And no one foresaw it. No one knew what was about to happen. And life is that way. It's unpredictable. We do not know what will happen even tomorrow, this time of day in our life. Well, God designed life deliberately that way, so that we have to look to Him. We have to trust God that He is the one that is in control. 1964 Olympics, there was the 10,000 meter race, and the United States had only one man that qualified for the race, Billy Mills. He was a Sioux Indian from South Dakota. And no one gave him any shot at winning the race. He just barely made the Olympic trials. But he was running against the world record holders in that race. And the United States had never won that race in many, many years and has never won it again since, the 10,000 meters. And yet that day, Billy Mills, an unheard of runner, won the gold medal for the United States. And he came out of nowhere on the final lap. And as they replayed it, they came to see that he ran the final lap of the 10,000 meters under 60 seconds. And as he was coming around the final turn, he sprinted and he passed those two world record holders, Ron Clark of Australia and one of the African runners. And yet, here was an unknown American who had never even come close to such a thing. He won the gold medal and he set a world record. So things like this happen in life. It's unpredictable. And sometimes it's for the good, sometimes it's for the bad. And yet we have to be prepared for those things to happen. We have to recognize the fact that I have no guarantee that I'm going to live another day. I may not make it throughout the week. I have to be thinking of those things. I have to be preparing my life for what might happen. Because we can get trapped in the circumstances of what's happening in life at that moment in time. And there can be time and chance. There can be misfortune. Accidents can happen that will change all the planning, all the best plans of mice and men. And that can all come down because life happens unexpectedly. So he goes on to his final thought here in chapter 9 is the superiority of wisdom. And he said, "This wisdom I have seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it. And he besieged it and built great snares around it. So there was found in it a poor wise man. He, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man." Here was a small city that was attacked by a powerful army. They came and they were very well trained in the military tactics, and they built a siege works, and they had the city surrounded, and there was no way it could be delivered. And yet there was a wise man living in this city. And this wise man, through his wisdom, delivered this city. How he did it, we don't know. But he had a strategy, he had a plan, and he came forward. And as a result of his wisdom, the city was delivered that day in a time of war when it looked hopeless for them. And yet, this wise man was not remembered. Here was a small city, and of all things, to have a small city with a man who was such a hero and how he had saved the city, and yet he was not remembered or honored after he was gone before long. People had forgotten about him. And so that is the way it is with wisdom. Wisdom is often wasted. Wisdom is often not followed. It is not respected as it ought to be. He said, "Then I said, wisdom is better than strength." Wisdom produces results. Look at what it did for that small city. This man had wisdom and he delivered the city. It produced results. And yet, nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heard. No one will listen to him. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So wisdom proves time and time again that it is superior to strength, to man's own strategies and man's own strength. Wisdom is stronger. It is far superior to that. But the poor man's wisdom is despised. He's just a poor man. He's nobody. Listen to what the experts, listen to what the powerful people say. The people up in Washington, the people up in New York, on Wall Street. What do they say? So here can be a wise man, and he has the wisdom that everyone needs to listen to. But no one wants to listen to him because he's not wealthy. He's not well known. He doesn't have the reputation. So we follow the advice of these who do not have the proper strategy. They're actually fools, and yet everyone falls in step and follows what they are saying because they are the ones in power. They're the ones that their voices shout louder than anyone else, and therefore they are the ones that end up being heard and followed. And we see that happening still today. So the words of the wise man, a wise man does not, he does not speak bombastically. He does not yell, try to yell out over the everyone else to be heard. He speaks softly. Here's what we need to do. He has the understanding. He has the wisdom. He speaks very softly. He doesn't need to yell. But the other man is yelling. The other man is loud, powerful. Here's what we need to do. And so what does the crowd do? They fall in step behind the one that is loud, that is his name and his reputation. He has the money. He has the power. So we fall in and we follow that person and we ignore the wisdom that the truly wise man has. So he said that wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So many times in life, we see that this very thing happens, that there is a person here who has brought wisdom and they have developed a plan and a strategy that is working, that the results are proven. And yet one sinner steps in, and because they are foolish and they think they know better than anyone else, they take over and it destroys the good that everyone else has been trying to accomplish for such a long time. That is the disappointing, the sad ending of wisdom, and that is the outcome that all too often is happening in the world. As Solomon saw it happening 3,000 years ago, it's still happening today. The same kind of unfortunate following of the wrong advice and not being willing to listen to the ones who actually can give the proper course of action based upon proven results that they are able to demonstrate that this is what we should do, this is the right thing to do, and yet that's not what people want to listen to and follow. So Solomon is pointing out that in life, the only one that we really can trust and know is God. And we have to recognize the fact that life and the future and the circumstances of life here on earth are in the hand of God. And that's where they need to be. That is where they are secure. So we need to be planning our life and putting our life in the direction to trust God, to be planning for the future that God can give us, because we have no guarantees where this life is concerned. But our life can be in the hands of God, and our eternity can be in the hands of God. So thank you for your attention today, and we are going to stand and sing the invitation as it is prepared, and we invite you to come as we stand together and sing. Jesus was tenderly